Well, the idea that the scientific enterprise is governed by a majority of opinion, it's not entirely a foolish idea. I mean, we can't get rid of it completely and say that the truth is so unassailable that it can be discovered by one individual, inevitably running against the tide of every other individual. There has to be some consensus and some points of view of science. And to suggest that the fact that so many biologists are willing publicly to endorse Darwinian theory is of no account is foolish. To a certain extent, I do agree with that. It is important to present within an educational establishment what is the standard, the mainstream, the canonical view. There's no question about that. But at the same time, for heaven's sake, let's open up the discussion a little bit and present some countervailing views, at least to the extent of appraising Darwinian theory in the context that realistically portrays it for what it is, a kind of amusing 19th century collection of anecdotes that is utterly unlike anything we see in the serious sciences. That would be my favorite position. Yeah, biologists do agree that this is the correct theory for the origin and diversification of life, but here are some points you should consider as well. One, the theory doesn't have any substance. Two, it's preposterous. Three, it's not supported by the evidence. And four, the fact that the biologists are uniformly in agreement about this issue could as well be explained by some solid Marxist interpretation of their economic interests. That would satisfy me. It's not asking for much, is it? We don't know anything about the progress of science. As far as we can tell, it depends on unique, unrepeatable events, the confluence of genius and inspiration. And in between those unique and unrepeatable events, there's a lot of patient work of accumulation of data, facts, theory, testing, assessment. It's not even clear that science is progressing. It might be moving in a circular pattern, ever deeper entrenchment of a single set of ideas. That certainly seems to be true in physics. Has physics progressed beyond Newtonian mechanics? Well, it's certainly been enriched. It certainly has acquired additional concepts, additional powers. Whether the powers are due to technological development or theoretical insight is another issue. I don't think we should make any large claims about the progress of science. We understand science as little as we understand the cosmos. I think, realistically speaking, we're hundreds of years away from having the same kind of understanding of living systems as we possess in parts of physics. And what we understand of physics deals with a very, very small range of experiences in the material world. That shouldn't be forgotten. And also, I turn on the faucet. I don't have a series of equations that can describe turbulent water flow. I just don't have that. Aerodynamics is not properly understood. Turbulence is not properly understood. And that's Newtonian mechanics. We certainly don't have a rock-solid understanding of the behavior of technological material objects in the contemporary world. We have a lot of anecdotes. No reason to expect progress in biology is going to be any more rapid than developments in physics. Why the assumption of celerity, that things should just happen, bang, 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 we'll understand everything at once? There are very deep conceptual issues in biology, very, very deep, very profound areas, not only of ignorance, but of understanding. This is a country with all too much civility. It really is, especially on important issues. But look how much we've lost in this country. I would encourage you to this. Go back to the 1920s, 1930s. Pick up anything that H.L. Mencken has written, for example. Robert Ingersoll, H.L. Mencken, handful of critics, and ask yourself, could one write this way today about important issues? And we've lost something in this country because we've become afraid of controversy, afraid of polemics. That's not a healthy thing. It's invigorating. The question whether name-calling is evidence of a imaginative paucity is hardly a fair question to put to me. I mean, because I revel in the name-calling, and when I don't have an argument, I tend to abuse my opponents just as easily as they tend to abuse me. Again, I don't think too much should be made of that. There is a pattern. It's not a scientific pattern, it's a pattern in human affairs. When people haven't been criticized in a long time, they react with a great deal of indignation when they're criticized for the first time. That's human nature. I mean, put yourself in the position of a Daniel Dennett or a Richard Dawkins, who are used to being the regnant priests of a powerful orthodoxy. And for the first time in their lives, someone says, hey, you guys are simply not credible. Of course they're going to react with outrage and indignation, hurl imprecations at others, resort to objurgations. That's only normal. If I remark that Daniel Dennett had his last idea in 1936 and it was under prenatal influences, what's wrong with that? It just sharpens the debate. It puts a lot of emotional emphasis on the debate, and it forces people to come up with something better. That's the real point of name-calling. It forces people to come up with something better. There are other factors at work. Decline in standards of vituperation. America used to be a country rich in insults. It really did. And we lose something in literary or intellectual culture when that's no longer accessible. You get a guy like Daniel Dennett, whose greatest intellectual achievement was growing that stupid beard of his, masquerading as a scientific expert on Darwinian theory, staring at the camera, and no one is dousing him with a bucket of water. It's incredible to me. Richard Dawkins is accepted as a great intellect, and a fine prose stylist, too. The guy writes, I mean, his prose resembles a string of sponges strung together on a wash line. Should be said. Should be said. This isn't a question of hatred. It's the question of the effective expression of indignation. There's no reason a democratic society has to be afraid of that. Go after the guys. We've become very defensive, very timid. I mean, look, the fact that we have to justify an attack on Darwinian theory is a very sad commentary on the health of American society. It shouldn't require a justification. It shouldn't, and yet it does. I mean, very timorous aspect to American society right now. It's gone to the black community, and that's a wonderful thing. But no community in America has mastery of the contemporary language of invective, insult, argo as the black community does. Trouble is, not enough of the guys in the black community are devoting their talents to attacking Darwinian theory or quantum mechanics. That's the trouble. Get these rappers off MTV, put them to work, focus direction on Darwin. Somebody's going to get discouraged in high school because he's dealing with a muttonhead as a high school biology teacher. He better not go into science at all. It really is a tough field. There's a lot of abuse. It's a very difficult enterprise. And you shouldn't be discouraged easily. The only thing you should take from your experience is the standing refutation of the doctrine of the survival of the fittest that every high school instructor in biology provides. You know, every education is experienced not only because of your teachers, but in spite of your teachers. I mean, I remember myself as a high school student, dumb as a post, completely inarticulate, incapable of reading, certainly incapable of writing. And I rather suspect my experience is pretty general. I mean, not many people are enthusiastic about contemporary high school students. That's one point. It's a factual point, whether they are or are not capable. But certainly in a democratic society, the idea that the high school has to be a kind of enlarged locker room where only the coach's pep talk is considered reasonable, that should be repugnant. That's not really how we want an educational establishment to be run, is it? Let's give high school students the benefit of the doubt. Let's say that they're a whole lot more intelligent, presentable, better dressed, better groomed, smarter, more sophisticated than they give every appearance of being. What's the loss? What do we risk? Just what do we risk if some of the profound, exciting, deeply perplexing, vexing issues of biology are presented honestly?